Well, podcasters, if you like Andrew Cuomo, or I'm sorry, Chris Cuomo, his very, very buff brother on CNN, today's not your podcast, because we do bring him up just a little bit. Andrew McCarthy is on. He's a former federal prosecutor, and he kind of talks a little bit about, you know, what Mueller really said yesterday. What really happened? And why did we even have this investigation if the Department of Justice can't do anything? He's fascinating. Also, we talk a little bit about the new Green Deal and global warming with a great expert. Cliff Maloney is with us. He is the president of Young Americans for Liberty. And I think I can explain the 2020 presidential candidates. What's happened? How is this so crazy? We've got a complete explanation for you at the end of the podcast.
And speaking of the 2020 candidates, tonight is the night. If you're, it's on blazetv.com/Glenn. That's where you can sign up. Use the promo code Glenn, save $10. Point is, Socialist Spotlight is tonight. And tonight's, we shine the light on Bernie Sanders. And more specifically, the people who are surrounding Bernie Sanders in his newly formed campaign are amazing.
This is important for you to watch, but it is probably even more important for Democratic friends of yours to watch. This explains almost everything that that party is going through right now, and it will show you the future. Watch it tonight, blazetv.com/Glenn. Use the promo code Glenn, save 10%. Here's the podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
I don't watch cable news anymore. And I don't watch cable news anymore because I can't take it. I mean, I know exactly what they were going to say yesterday. If you watched it, you knew exactly what they were going to say. It didn't matter. The truth doesn't seem to matter. Nobody's really looking for the truth. And we feel overwhelmed between Facebook, Google, even Wikipedia. We've done the last couple of shows on television. We did short segments on who Wikipedia really is. You know, right now, we are giving our intellectual power over to two companies, Google and Wikipedia. Well, we know who Google is, but try to sit in a room and say to somebody, oh, what was the name of that guy that was in that movie with somebody will Google it. Try to go a day without Google. And once it's said on Google, that's true. No matter what the topic is, if Google has produced that result, that's absolutely true. And we are being manipulated. But not only that, we are giving up our intellectual power because our power is being externalized. We're taking our knowledge and externalizing it. We're giving it to someone else. And we are losing that muscle of being able to find truth, to know and recognize the truth. That's the real problem in America. People don't know how to find it. They don't know how to recognize it. They don't even believe that it exists anymore unless it comes from Google or Wikipedia. We spent the last couple of days just looking at Wikipedia and what they say and who is editing Wikipedia. This thing is so frequently used that it's as if we took the entire population of the world and everybody visited it twice a month. Now think of that. That's how much it's being used. So what is it? Who's making these edits? Well, you have 1,400 people that are responsible for most of Wikipedia. 1,400 people. And if you look at the leaders of that, they're all communist, Marxist, Antifa members. I mean, they're all people that do not agree with you. 1,400 people are the ones that are compiling the world's knowledge. And they're not like you. you feel alone because it's so huge. But there are very few people that are doing it. Tonight on television, we're going to go to Bernie Sanders, and I'm going to show you who Bernie Sanders is surrounding himself with. Forget everything you think about Bernie Sanders. Forget about it. What we're going to expose tonight and on Monday, it's a two-parter, is remarkable. The people he has surrounded himself with are some of the worst people out there. Now, remember, I'm the guy who said, hey, Donald Trump, he says he surrounds himself with the best, but he doesn't. Steve Bannon and pretty much all the people who have caused any of the problems that he got rid of right away. Those were the people we said, this is the real problem. Look who he's surrounding himself with. And he figured that out pretty quickly and got rid of all of those people. Bernie Sanders has worse people around him. And there's no chance of these people going away, because these are the people that are actually causing the split in the Democratic Party that no one else will talk about. What we're going to show you tonight on television at 5 o'clock on Bernie Sanders is more important, really, for Democrats to watch than it is even you, because you're not going to vote for Bernie Sanders. I'm not going to vote for Bernie Sanders. But there's going to be a lot of people that do vote for Bernie Sanders, and they will have no idea what he really believes based on who he has put in charge of his policies and his campaign. It is a terrifying look, but it is the same kind of people. It is. I just said to the researchers 2 days ago as we were looking into this, they brought me, you know, the latest stuff. And I said, go a step further, because you've tracked this back to 2008. I can guarantee you that we're going to find the same people that we were talking about in 2008 as their mentors. It's a very small group of people that are trying to tell the masses something that we never have used in America. We've never described the American people as the masses. But the masses are what is being discussed by many of these democratic socialists. What we have to do for the masses. And they're forgetting the individual. And they do it because they think that it is their arrogance. It is their arrogance that will be their undoing. There is this cocoon that these Marxist, socialist, progressives live in, where they control the intellectual debate and the intellectual neighborhood. Everybody who owns a house in the intellectual neighborhood, all those people, they're all on board, and they make sure that no one else moves into that neighborhood. They also control the media and Hollywood. And they make sure that no one else. I read an article from CNN last night that actually said that the mainstream media looked very different than Fox News. And they actually put Fox News out of the mainstream media, which in some ways I agree with. However, they're more mainstream than CNN. More people are watching Fox News and more diverse than watching CNN. You have liberals watching Fox News. How many people that are conservative are watching CNN? How many of us can even take CNN anymore? And they're living in this cocoon where they just protect each other, and they grow more and more arrogant because they live truly in an echo chamber. Now, many of us on the right live in an echo chamber too, but nowhere near what the elitist left lives in. Chris Cuomo yesterday, can we play the video that we played yesterday afternoon of the woman, the NRA spokeswoman, who was horribly raped. She's been on this program before, and she was horribly raped for 2 hours. she was raped when she went to college, and everybody said, oh, no, this is really safe. You're going to be fine. Well, she was the first woman to be raped at that particular dorm. Here's her story. Listen.
I was a normal 20-year-old college student. When I moved into off-campus housing, they boasted that it was safe. Not a single incident since it had opened. I was the first. I woke up in the middle of the night, suffocating. Shut up, he said. Don't say a word. For the next 2 hours, I knew I was going to die, and there was nothing I could do. Now I'm a mother of two. And if that predator or anyone else tries to harm me or my family, they have to come through my firearm first. I will never be unarmed or utterly vulnerable ever again. The only reason I can say that is because the NRA fought for my rights before I ever knew that I needed them. I'm the National Rifle Association of America, and I'm freedom's safest place.
So, Chris Cuomo tweets yesterday, only in America. What the hell does that mean? Only in America. Now, I can take that as a positive. Damn right. Only in America can anyone go out and buy themselves a gun to be able to protect themselves and their family. Yeah, only in America. But that's not what he meant. Only in America. Now, I contend that he never even watched the video. He just did what everybody does. And they see something. He saw NRA. I'm a mother. If a predator comes in, I'm going to use my firearm. He just read the tweet, didn't watch the video, saw NRA and thought, oh, my gosh, look at this. Only in America. Well, he got hammered yesterday, as he should have been hammered. But you'll notice this is not going to destroy his career. This is not going to even be a blip in his life.
Usually when you mock rape victims,
you're destroyed.
You have some problems going on.
Yeah.
But not in this case. I mean, if you know anything about Chris Cuomo, which most people don't, he always doubles down and he believes he's the smartest man in the world. So he thinks he can always talk himself out of these situations, and he just falls. He's Sideshow Bob walking into rakes over and over and over again everywhere he turns. Chris Cuomo.
Right. And this is the guy who just last week was defending a woman who said that thing that's growing in a woman's uterus is not a baby.
That's right. He sided with her.
So the guy is a complete lunatic. Lunatic. Let's first discuss just that. We're now feeling it necessary to defend ourselves to people who have gone mad. We are no longer at a place to where we're talking about Roe versus Wade. We're talking about arguing with people who say that even until birth, that's not a baby. What are we doing? Why do we feel like we've gone insane? The world has gone insane. You've stood in place, which is the right thing to do. You've stood in place as everyone else has gone off the crazy cliff. And this small number of people happen to have power in the media and in the political organizations. And so they are manipulating it to make it feel like you are the one. No, you're not the one. You're not the one. They're the handful. Chris Cuomo, let me ask you this. Should we make handgun use safe, rare, safe and rare? Should we do that? Because what's the third one, Stu? It's safe,
legal.
Rare, and legal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, legal. But maybe we should just take handgun use and we should make it a woman's choice. And women can use guns at any time for any reason. Or should we just make it legal for rape and incest? Because here was a rape victim that you supposedly care about. That's the one you used to say you're fighting for. The one that you can never really understand. You would never even put yourself, how dare you even question someone who is a rape victim and what they decide to do? Well, you just question them. So is it your hatred for children? I know you're saying you're against, you know, you want more gun control because of the children. But wait a minute. You're at the same time arguing for the death of children. In fact, not even identifying children. You can just kill that thing 5 minutes before it's born. Do you hate children? Do you hate women? Because I think maybe you'd be best served if you were consistent. It's rape and incest. And women have the right to do with their body whatever they want to do. And so they could use a handgun at any time. Whoever they shoot is not really a person unless they declare them to be a person.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hi, it's Glenn. If you're a subscriber to the podcast, can you do us a favor and rate us on iTunes? If you're not a subscriber, become one today and listen on your own time. You can subscribe on iTunes. Thanks. Douglas, you're on the Glenn Beck program. Welcome. Douglas, are you there?
I am here, yes.
Yes, hi.
Douglas Cloisterman. I'm a spokesperson for Christopher Cuomo.
You're a spokesperson?
Yes, I happened to hear some of your commentary here.
Yeah.
Very disappointed in the way you looked at this incident.
Okay.
I've been talking to Chris since it happened, and there's some issues. He did write only in America.
Right.
However, you have to remember, he did not have a lot of space. Twitter is a short-form communication.
I think there's 270 characters he could use. There was
some confusion.
A dozen
there.
Or so.
He used 15 characters.
Right.
Now, he usually tweets from the gym, and he also does usually about 15 reps of max rack pulls.
Uh-huh.
So he may have been confused by that.
Right, okay, okay.
Clear.
All right, okay.
I think a lot of times Chris tries to reveal his softer side. In a similar way, he wrote, "I'm sorry for the confusion. Take this issue seriously. Also, as you know, muscles don't stop bullets," is what he wrote. And
right.
It's very true. You know, it's the same way he likes to reveal a little bit of his softer side, the same way he kind of usually unbuttons the top two buttons on his shirt while he's broadcasting on CNN.
Right.
Revealing just a little bit of his perfectly crafted chest.
Right.
I talked to him at the gym yesterday after this went down.
And right.
He was broken up. It was sad. It was leg day. He was doing quads, calves, and glutes.
Right.
And it really was a big misunderstanding. And I went back to him after this, and I said, you know, a few hours later, I called him and I said, you know, you've had a tough day today. And he said, you know, well, I'm actually at the gym right now. I'm working on my planks up to 44 minutes now, which is pretty impressive.
Right.
Actually, but he said our discourse is like arm day. You know, when you're triceps and you're doing skull crushers, he said it's dangerous.
I know.
It leaves you sore afterwards, but it's worth it.
Right.
And I think that's what we needed to communicate.
I don't even know what you're talking about anymore.
I talked to him in that evening, and he was obviously not at the gym anymore. He was taking a shower at the gym.
Right.
And he said, we need to wash ourselves of this angst, like the suds dripping down my perfectly crafted chest and core.
Right.
And I thought it was...
You're a spokesperson. I don't think this is helping me. Helping his case at all.
He said very clearly to me, and I want your listeners to hear this, we need to inject grace into our discourse in the same way you'd inject anabolic steroids into your neck before a workout.
All right. Thank you, I think.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, it's Glenn, and I want to tell you about something that you should either end your day with or start your morning with, and that is The News and Why It Matters. If you like this show, you're going to love The News and Why It Matters. It's a bunch of us that all get together at the end of the day and just talk about the stories that matter to you and your life. The News and Why It Matters. Look for it now wherever you download your favorite podcast. Pat Gray is joining us now from his podcast.
And are you so glad about that, too?
Don't seem like it.
No,
I'm not really feeling that.
No, yeah. I wanted to be honest. You know, people ask, hey, how are you? I like to think about it and give an honest answer. Hey, yeah, are you glad I'm here?
That's good. You want to tell the truth.
No, I'm not. But Pat is doing the work, you know, that really not a lot of Americans will do, and that is watch The View.
Right, so you don't have to.
Right.
Because sometimes you see some interesting things. It's very rare,
really?
But every once in a while something happens. Like yesterday, there were a couple of things. One of the things that happened was that the girls were edited as they were bashing Trump. Here's what happened on The View yesterday.
What if he calls him Sleepy Joe? What is that supposed to mean?
Can we pause it for a second right there, though? Let's pause it for a second. Joy Behar doesn't know what the word sleepy means.
He calls him Sleepy Joe. What does that mean?
Do you think anybody sleeps around her?
Sleepy?
Nobody sleeps around her.
It's not really complicated, though. Look it up. There's no such word in the dictionary. A Google search turns up nothing. I don't know. What is sleepy? I don't get it. Anyway, there's more.
It doesn't matter. This is one of his things. He calls people's names, But I just think people are tired of it. They don't care. You call people names and stuff. Well, I mean, listen, you can get into the
first edit.
Second. But you know what we're doing? We are in that.
Third. And they do it one more time, too. They edit them four times. In that little
swearing
segment.
Or something?
Yeah, I don't think they were. I think one time they swore, but most of it was just like Trump bashing, I think.
That is really
weird. Are you sure this was an edit or this was a.
No, that's what I thought. It was a technical problem, but let's see. We discovered it wasn't a technical problem because of the blurring of the lips. They also took the time to blur. I think it was Joy's lips, so you couldn't tell what she was saying.
Blob.
I know, the whole
thing.
We used to do the Jeffy cam. Remember, we used to blur Jeffy every time he came on the
yes.
air?
Yes, wouldn't that be appropriate for Joy?
For Joy,
I think so,
the
too.
Joy cam. That would bring
like that.
People joy.
Yeah. It would.
Also,
it would.
Blur out her name, because she's not named properly. There is no Joy where Joy is concerned. We've noticed that before, and it's getting worse, I think, as time goes on. Joy just seems to be...
So when did ABC start to edit?
That's what I'd like to know. I don't know why they're doing that. I don't know if there's some directive now for
ratings.
The ratings.
Maybe they know they can't stop these women from saying these things, and the ratings are. I don't know what.
Maybe it's just they're just editing when Joy speaks.
And Whoopi.
Let's just go
It'd
dark.
Be a better show.
Again. Yeah.
You know, and they might consider, I don't know, rather than editing, that takes a lot of effort. Is take her off the show. You ever thought of that?
Can you imagine? I mean, I've not heard this anywhere. And you imagine if Fox News would have dropped my audio
while you're
talking about Obama. Can you imagine what would have been said?
Oh.
From the left and the right.
Yeah.
They probably would have cheered.
Yeah, but they would have demanded, they would have made a big deal out of
what
it.
What was saying, it he said? What did he say?
What did he say? Mm-hmm. Look at Fox News. He's even too extreme for Fox News. What did he say? Yada, yada, yada. Who's making that decision? There's a falling out. Nobody's
talking about this. I mean, what was it they were saying about Trump that was so bad? ABC had to edit it. I don't know.
Wasn't it a long time ago that Joy Behar supposedly left The View to like go do gigs in the Catskills or something?
that was a long time ago. Something about that.
How'd she get back on the show? Has the show been on the whole time?
Like, the Catskills. The Catskills surrounded ABC and demanded they take her back. Everyone in the Catskills. They were like, look, man, we're bad with bad comedy. We're down with bad comedy and old people. But this one, this is a bridge too far.
Calls him Sleepy Joe. What is that supposed to mean?
It doesn't matter. This is one of his things. He calls people's names. Call people's names. But I just think people are tired of it. They don't care.
Let's stop one more time. I love the sleepy thing is really a charming part of this that
it
you
is,
pointed out.
It is.
Because number one, like, she's trying to get a comedy rant started of some sort. Like, she's got something she wants to get to.
Sleepy. And the Catskills population are going, you see?
That's why we rejected her. That's why we gave her back. Remember the time when she said she was funnier than you?
Yes.
That may be true now. That may be true.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Contributing editor, National Review, and you can find him at andrewmccarthy.com. Andy is a former federal prosecutor and a good friend and a good friend of the program. What the hell happened yesterday, Andy? What did a rational person take away from that press conference yesterday? What were we supposed to learn?
Well, I think, Glenn, that the upshot of it is that Mueller wanted it understood that he was transmitting his obstruction information to Congress with the understanding that it's for Congress to deal with presidential misconduct. I mean, I think to cut to the chase, that's the bottom line. And I've always thought it's easier to look at this, especially for the non-lawyer. I can just imagine how people's heads spin. But the thing to bear in mind with this is that Congress does not need a prosecutable
case,
felony offense,
correct,
in order to impeach.
Right.
It needs misconduct that what the framers' idea would have been would be an abuse of power, an egregious abuse of the public trust. Gerald Ford, I think, was more cynical, but maybe more accurate in 1970 when he was the minority leader of the House trying to impeach Justice William L. Douglas. And he said an impeachable offense is anything that the House of Representatives decides it is in a given moment in history.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I think has gone on here all along is Mueller has taken his writ, which was not a traditional prosecutor's writ, even though it was supposed to be under the regulations. He was really given a counterintelligence investigation, not a criminal investigation. And even though that distinction, I think, sometimes makes people's eyes glaze over, it's important because counterintelligence is really just an information gathering exercise. It's not necessarily geared toward building a criminal case. So in the normal criminal case or the normal situation, there would be a basis to believe a crime got committed, and then you assign a prosecutor. Here, what they did was they used the Russia interference in the election as a pretext for assigning a prosecutor a counterintelligence investigation, which effectively unleashed him to look for a crime under circumstances where there was no factual basis to believe a crime had been committed.
So, Andy, help me out on this. Why did the Department of Justice lead this if they had no way to charge the president with anything?
Glenn, I think there's two different things here that Mueller has conflated, and he's completely wrong about this. There's two different decisions that have to be made. One is, do we have enough evidence to prosecute? And secondly, assuming the answer to the first question is yes, do we invoke the Justice Department guidance that says a sitting president may not be indicted? The first decision doesn't have anything really to do with the second decision. They're factually distinct. And the first decision on the sufficiency of the evidence is the decision that's supposed to be made by the prosecutor who's assigned to the case. So Mueller's job here, all this nonsense he talks about, how we can't, you know, because the Justice Department can't charge, obviously that should not have entered into our minds. That's ridiculous. He has to make a call about whether there's a case or not. And then if it turns out that he thinks that there is a case, which means there is evidence that a prosecutor believes a rational jury could convict the accused on beyond a reasonable doubt, then it's up to the Justice Department as an institution to decide whether to invoke the guidance that says a sitting president can't be indicted. But there's no reason to use that as a basis or a rationale for not making the decision about whether there's a case or not.
So do you think he wanted the president to be impeached, and so he just left that door open because he couldn't make a case? And so he left that door open knowing that impeachment is whatever the Congress can convince the American people is bad, we can impeach on.
Yeah, Glenn, I think they figured out, this is Mueller and his staff, that this was the surest way to get their evidence to the Congress. And what I mean by that is, if Mueller had decided that there was an obstruction case, then he would have recommended that to the Attorney General, Barr. Now, by the time this came around and Barr was the Attorney General, Mueller had to know that the theory under which he was investigating obstruction was different and not going to be acceptable to the Justice Department under Barr, because Barr has a very different idea, and I think it's the correct idea, but that's neither here nor there. They have different ideas about what obstruction is. Mueller was investigating it on a much looser theory,
mm-hmm.
and I think that if he had recommended charges, then he would have had trouble getting that report out the door, because then there would have been a big Justice Department to-do over whether he had applied the right legal standard or not. Instead, what he did, curiously, but I think probably in the end cleverly, was to say, I've got to decide. And here's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to give you the evidence on both sides of the question and not make a decision. And I'll rely for doing that on the Justice Department guidance that says you can't indict a sitting president anyway. And that way, he managed to get his evidence out the door. Whereas I think if he had recommended a charge, that this would have all gone very differently.
So now, what... Because last night, what I heard were two things. One, I respect the Attorney General. Barr is clean and good with me. I think he did the right thing. That's not what the media was reporting. Did I miss something on that one?
No, I don't think so. I think the big area of controversy that the media has focused on is that Barr testified that at least three times emphatically Mueller told him that his decision not to make a decision on obstruction was not because of the Office of Legal Counsel guidance that you can't indict a sitting president. And then lo and behold, if you look at the report, that is exactly the reason that he relies on. So the argument was that Barr had misled everyone along these lines. And I think Mueller is conceding that he did say to Barr what Barr contends, that is, that the OLC guidance wasn't the reason. Now, what I think people are missing that we should focus on is the timeline. Here's what I think happened here, Glenn. The first time that they meet after Barr is confirmed is March 5th. And it's at that meeting that Mueller tells Barr, I'm not going to decide on the obstruction. Barr asks him, is that because of the OLC guidance? He says no. And then Barr says to him, well, what's the reason? And he says, we're still formulating our reason. And then 2.5 weeks later, he files his report, and he uses the OLC guidance as the reason. So I think what happened here is Mueller just decided not to decide with rationale to be filled in later. And as it got down to the end, they decided to rely on the OLC guidance. So I think maybe on March 5th, he didn't realize that that was where he was coming out. But by the time he filed the report on March 22nd, that was what he relied on.
The other thing is I gathered that what he was saying was, look, all of the evidence that you need to impeach, and the only evidence that we could find, is in the report. You have it all. So don't come to me and ask, and don't do anything. You have to decide this is impeachable or not. And I've read through the lines that he was thinking that it was. And I'll testify, but only to those things that are in the report, because that's all there is. Do I have that right?
You do, and I thought that was a but, you know, I don't want to cast aspersions unnecessarily at Mueller. I like to just try to keep this on the issues.
Yes.
But I thought that was very presumptuous and egomaniacal of him, I must say.
In what way?
If he were, well, can you imagine I'm in front of a court of appeals making a legal argument, and a judge has the temerity to ask me, Mr. McCarthy, what about this argument? And I say, hey, look, I wrote a brief. Go read it. Be done with you. You don't get to do that. The witness doesn't get to decide what questions he can be asked. Mueller doesn't get to decide, well, I've already given you my report. I have nothing else to say. You get subpoenaed. You come into the tribunal, whether it's Congress or a court, and they'll decide what they're going to ask you and what you have a right to answer and not answer. Now, he's trying to fend off testifying. It's abundantly clear that he doesn't want to testify, because if he did, they would have been delighted to have him, right? He would have testified already. And I think Jerry Nadler is going to be savvy enough to realize that Mueller gave him as much
Wait, we're losing.
We
just lost you. You said Jerry Nadler is savvy enough to what?
To not press this issue of bringing Mueller in to testify. Much out of Mueller as he's ever going to get from that statement yet.
Right.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program. Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
So at the website weatherbell.com, Joe Bastardi is there. And he is the chief meteorologist for Weather Bell. He is the author of The Climate Chronicles. He is a guy who was wildly, wildly accredited and wildly... just one of the most quoted and one of the best weather guys and meteorologists that we had in the country until climate change. Then, of course, when he went, wait a minute, I actually do this for a living. I am a scientist and none of this works. That's when he started to find himself in hot water. He is still on the same bandwagon saying, you know, this Green New Deal, this is going to kill America and just wreak havoc and hurt every American. We have Joe joining us now. Hi, Joe. How are you?
Very well. Thanks for having me. I've always wanted to chit-chat with you. We've done it a couple of times, but
yeah,
this time a little bit longer.
You have looked into the Green New Deal. And how long did it take you to figure out this has nothing to do with climate?
Well, I wrote the book on that. For those of you, I always tell people, go look at the book. And if you don't like it, then on a cold winter night, you can throw it in the fireplace and it'll help heat your house, because we want to make sure that you get that. But and book burning can be popular today. And I'm sure mine is. But here's in 2015, when the former EPA administrator, Gina McCarthy, was testifying before Congress, she agreed with the idea that the proposals being made would only save 0.01 Celsius over 30 years. But she said the real benefits are that we're going to show the planet what you're supposed to do. Now, I'm sitting here going, well, look, America's the most prosperous country in the world, greatest experiment in freedom. If the rest of the planet hasn't followed us there, why are they going to sit there and start following us now?
Right.
I mean, it doesn't make sense. But let me put this in perspective for you, because perspective, and see, the problem is that my father, who's a meteorologist, graduated out of Texas A&M in 65. I always go down to Texas. But in any case, he taught me that the foundation you stand on today was built yesterday to reach for tomorrow. And so when you look back at the weather and what the weather and climate has done, not only in this country, but in the entire world, you sit there and it's almost as if it's a shooting fish in a barrel when these people bring, oh, this is the worst ever. You know, and that's one of the biggest things that I rely on looking at patterns in the past. You know, I tell people I don't have any life except my good Lord above, my family, weather, and Penn State wrestling. That's about all I have. So most of the time it's with wrestling. But listen to this. The U.S. is currently only responsible for 15% of the man-made CO2, 15%. Mankind is responsible for 0.01% of that. So let's do the math. It means that the U.S. contribution to the CO2 total of the atmosphere is 0.00015 of the atmosphere. And what's the Green New Deal solution? Destroy the American economy. I mean, really, because we all know that energy is the lifeline of our economy. Now, I'm not against any energy. And as a matter of fact, my company, we develop products for wind and solar to make those forecasts more accurate. Because, you know, we had a situation in Texas, Glenn, for instance, I guess it was 2011, where you had a big freezing rainstorm in West Texas where all the wind turbines are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you needed heat for Dallas and Houston, and the wind turbines can't turn. Well, if a power company knows that there's that threat 4 or 5 days away, they may acquire energy from another power company that's not having that kind of way. So this is what I do. I have nothing against alternative energy. And this argument to me is not an argument. Like, for instance, I know and understand the other side of the argument. And I keep telling people on my side of the argument, until such a time that the planet actually starts to cool, they have every right in the world, and you should be open-minded what's going on. But here's the big thing. The total picture, if you look at the geological history of the Earth, it's the totality of the journey, not 6 seconds out of an 80-year-old man's life, which is what the last 40 years has been. You think about that stuff, and you look back, you think about the sun, the oceans, stochastic events, the very design of the system, and that gets them mad because it means that I believe in God very, very strongly. So what happens is you look at those things and you say, well, wait a minute. Why is this the first time in known history that man is wrecking the climate? Now, let me just say one more thing because I'm open-minded. I realize this is your show. If I could have wrestled the way I talk, I would have been a national champ. But listen, what happens is this. If they are correct, it's very seductive, because if you're the guy that found out that CO2 was a climate control knob, you're like Galileo, for goodness sakes. So how do you, after 30 – see, I'm very empathetic, whatever that word is. It's got too many syllables for me. But what happens is, if you've been doing this for 30 years, you now own it. It becomes your life. And if it becomes your life, what happens if someone attacks your idea? They're attacking your life. And you know, there's also a lot of people on the other side that are reaching for the higher plane. So when you look at that, I try to tell people I try to be the dumbest man in the room, because the dumbest man in the room, if you're hungry, is going to find the food, right? So you look everywhere. If you're the smartest guy in the room and all you're doing is looking at one thing, you're not going to see the very things that challenge you that you need to perfect your arguments. And so that's the way I am. I realized a long time ago that the weather is an infinite, majestic system that, and the more I learn about the field, the less I know about it in the totality of it. There's a book out there called The Half-Life of Facts about how fast knowledge is expanding. Mm-hmm. And when you look at those things, it gives you a perspective of humility and understanding that, sorry, you're not controlling the whole shooting match.
So, Joe, I just read a story last week of a new wood is what how they described it. But it's a new kind of wood that if we clad our homes in this, and it's man-made wood, it will save us 50% to 80% on our electricity bills because it is such a good insulator. I mean, I just don't understand how, if you really care about the environment, you should be A, vegan, B, for nuclear power plants, and you should be looking to the free market system, because it's the free market system that is developing all of these things. Everything the government has tried to do fails.
Solyndra was pretty good.
Yeah, well, that's the thing that makes me, you know, in the book, most of, for instance, is a chapter in there called The Weaponization of the Weather. And that was put out a year ago saying this is what's going to happen. Every single event is going to be like that, because when you look at it, the scientific argument is the same argument as who's better, Texas or Texas A&M in football, right? It lasts about 10 minutes, and then you move on. But what happens is this, and this is why I said the book is a love story, because what I have loved since I was 3 years old, I mean, I remember my parents tell me when I was three, I used to sneak outside, lie on my back and stare at the sun through the clouds. I almost burned my retinas out. That's how fascinated I was with the weather from being a little kid. So when you see this dragged through the mud and you see everybody, you know, where were you when, you know, I was 15 years old crying because we missed a snowstorm in Atlantic City, for instance? You weren't anywhere to be found. And one of the other things that gets me is that they come out after the fact. Now, Glenn, you've been down there for a while. You guys have been down there for a while. You know, after 2012, the Texas, there were a lot of people saying, oh, this is the beginning of a new Dust Bowl, the new perma-drought, right? Because you had three straight years of and it was just like 52 through 54, which I know about because growing up down at Texas A&M, I know about the Junction Boys and how bad the weather was in 52, 53, 54. And like clockwork, 4 years later, it turned around then and it turned around now. So I'm seeing stuff, I guess it was USA Today had today. Well, this is a sign of climate change, all the wet weather. Well, what answer don't you own? If it snows cheese in Dallas on New Year's Eve, that's climate change too. So this is what's going on. They wait till after the fact and say, see that? And, you know, in the weather and forecasting and in the private sector, what Weatherbell does, we have to tell people the why before the what and hit the forecast. Because you want to know something? National Weather Service is great. There's 1,700 private companies out there by guys, real, real sharp people. And if you're not right, you're not going to get paid. So I use everything I have at my disposal, including understanding and knowing the past, to project into the future. And that's not what I'm seeing on the other side. I see a climatologist who say, well, this is a sign of this or this is a sign of that. Well, why didn't you tell me this was going to happen back in February?
Correct.
Right? You take what's going on now. The reason we have so many tornadoes is because it's so cold across much of the country. 2008. 2011, and this year, with the three coldest Mays in the Northern Plains and back into the Southwest that we've recorded in the last 15 years. Well, guess where the tornado spikes are? Well, if you get a cold May, you're naturally getting warmer air coming out of the Gulf of Mexico. You're going to get big fights going on, and that's what you've got. But that's not because it's just warm everywhere. Last May was warm all over the United States, and we had a record low amount of tornadoes in the month of May. As a matter of fact, folks, there is ample reason to believe that the greening of the planet, which is occurring, and Dr. Will Happer talks about this all the time, that we're basically coming out of a CO2 drought, right? Plants grow better at four times the amount of CO2 in the air. What is the synergistic relationship between animal and plant? Since animals exhale 100 times more CO2 than they inhale, and plants then take that and grow from it. So what we're coming out of that. So the demonization of CO2, or for instance, guys, what's the average temperature of the planet? What's the perfect temperature of the planet? I mean, you know, they say hottest year ever. Well, wait a minute. It's only the mean temperature is 57.5, 58 degrees. How's that hot? Right. What if it's 58.5? What does that mean for Dallas? Oh, it doesn't mean that Dallas is going to be 115 degrees every day. Right. So it's back and forth and natural.
Joe Bastardi is his name, and he is the author of the new book, The Climate Chronicles. Been out for a while. Really good. Climate Chronicles. If you want the facts on the Green New Deal, on what climate change really is, what this is all about, the facts to be able to argue it, you'll get them from Joe and his new book, The Climate Chronicles. Joe, thank you so much. We'll talk to you again.
This is the Best of the Glenn Beck Program.
want to bring Cliff Maloney in. He is the president of Young Americans for Liberty. You know who Chris Cuomo is? Do you even? I mean, because you're Young Americans for Liberty, let me explain television. Television was this old thing that they used to have news in a place called CNN, and people would watch it.
Wow.
Yeah. Any comments on Chris Cuomo before we move on to Venezuela and guns?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're exactly right. He's kind of the face, if you will, of people who they want to lecture and act like they're playing both sides, and there's definitely more than one in every family. But I mean, I don't know anybody under the age of 40 that watches him, because you're just being talked at. You know, he's not talking with the viewers. He's kind of saying, "Hey, look, this is the way it is, and you know, I'm holier than thou, and I know better than thou." And I don't think anybody's got time for that.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about an article that you wrote, an opinion piece. Venezuela is the poster child for gun control gone wrong. Amen. Thank you for saying this.
You know, it's been funny, Glenn. I've gotten, I didn't expect it to be as controversial as a topic. But, I mean, look, we all know gun control is the premise. It is the root foundation of socialism. I mean, if you are going to have control, and if the government is going to dictate, you know, who does what, how they do it, when they can do it, you can't defend yourself. And I'm surprised, you know, I put this piece together. I mean, you look back in 2012 in Venezuela, that was the big step. They restricted the right to own firearms. They, you know, we know this as conservatives and libertarians, that means taking away the ability to defend yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to a tyrannical government and what you're seeing right now in Venezuela, you know, and if you talk to normal people in Venezuela, I mean, some of the stories and some of the quotes and just what you're hearing from people is, damn, I wish we had the ability to defend ourselves. And so it's to me, it's a perfect example of how socialism is just totally fixated on disarming the citizenry. And I think conservatives and libertarians should not sit back. We always try to say, oh, you know, it's for hunting, and you hear the... No,
no, it's not.
To defend ourselves against a tyrannical government, period.
Can I tell you something? We were just talking about this yesterday. I am so sick of people saying, oh, you're going to take on the Jets and the United States of America. Yeah. Cave dwellers have been doing it pretty effectively for the last 20 years. Yeah. Yeah, and we have more guns, and we don't live in caves. I think we need to be honest about that and say that's what that was for. It wasn't for hunting. It wasn't for sport. Otherwise, bowling might be in the Constitution. It is about protecting yourself against a government gone insane.
And you know what kills me, Glenn, is the hypocrisy of the left, where they say, hey, the government should not have power because Trump is in charge.
Oh, I know.
But hold on. But if our guy's in charge, we want to give total power to the government. And I can't handle this inconsistency from my friends on the left, because it's like, look, you've got to stop giving your power as a citizen, your power to hold the government accountable. You can't just go with the whims of whether your party's in charge or your party's not in charge.
No, but it's worse. It's worse than that. They're advocating for now. Trump is an absolute dictator waiting to grab control. Let's turn in all of our guns right now. I mean, it's not like under Trump they've said, oh, let's slow down on taking guns. Let's wait until our guy gets in. They take them today. It's crazy.
I give them too much credit.
Yeah.
I give them too much credit.
Nuts. It's just nuts. So what has the controversy been about this? Because I know if you point out, hey, there's a result of a socialist nation, even though they were all on the record saying this is socialist utopia in Venezuela, now they claim that wasn't socialism. It was never socialism. Don't make me laugh. That was socialism. What is the pushback on the argument with you on gun control in Venezuela?
Yeah, so the first point is what you said when it comes to people say, oh, well, you really think this is to you know, the Second Amendment is really to defend against a tyrannical government? And to that I say yes, and to the points that you made, I mean, but people really don't see that. And I'm not even talking just on the far left, but just pretty much any of my Democrat friends. They really don't understand that government power is inherently bad when you centralize power and you need to have a check and balance. The second part is people are continuing to throw me the line, Cliff, this is not real socialism. And exactly my comeback for the past week and a half is what you said, Glenn, and that is every single person in the country that is pushing for this Democrat socialism, call it whatever you want, they're all on record praising Venezuela over the past 5 to 6 years.
All of them.
So there is no defense. This is socialism. This is government power, and this is a perfect example. So why I called the piece. You know, it is. It's a poster child of this so-called gun control gone wrong, but the left doesn't want to own it, and I'm not giving them that pass. And once again, I continue to tell my libertarian and conservative friends, do not back down. Do not give them one inch on this issue, because this is a perfect example of the type of government control they want and what results when you put government control at such a high level over the ability of citizens to have guaranteed rights.
Talking to Cliff Maloney from Young Americans for Liberty. Cliff, it's an interesting thing, because I think there is the natural sort of inertia of human beings is bondage. It's been bondage forever. And, you know, liberty's hard for a lot of people. And so a lot of times we slip back into this, you know, since socialism has been around, there's always been times where it's flared up, even in the United States at some level, but all over the world. It's just fascinating to me. Can you explain it all, the timing of while we're watching Venezuela essentially burn itself to the ground, now is the time where Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is on the rise and Bernie Sanders is competing for the presidency? Why, of all times, right now, when we're seeing the worst failure of a government in, I mean, even worse than Zimbabwe, they're saying, we're seeing that right now, and now's the time that the Americans are deciding to walk towards socialism?
Yeah, well, let me start off by saying this. I think that young people get a bad rap. You know, we work with college students, and I think that, you know, polls will show you like 43% of Americans support some sort of socialism. And that should scare the hell out of us. Don't get me wrong. But I think what gives me some hope is when you look at young people, it's not always the AOCs and the Bernies that they're going towards. It's when you break it down issue by issue, they don't want the government taking 30 cents of every dollar they make. They don't want the government reading their emails or spying on, you know, their cell phones. They don't want the government, you know, spending these boatloads of money and running these trillion-dollar deficits. But what's happening is the socialists, I will admit this, they are winning the messaging battle.
Mm-hmm.
The socialists are winning the hearts and minds. They understand that everything is 30-second clips on Twitter. They're shortening things down. I don't want to say they're dumbing it down, but I'm going to say it. That's what they're doing. They're dumbing down to pull on heartstrings. And look, Democrats have done this for years. The problem is the socialists are not hiding anymore. They're owning the label.
Mm-hmm.
And what this does is it gives an opportunity, and I'm going to be very careful how I say this, to free market capitalists.
Yes.
You know, the problem I've had is the crony capitalists over the years, they are such a problem for us in the liberty camp, because the crony capitalists create this environment where now the left can use the tactic that they use on us and say, well, that, you know, now we have to say, well, that wasn't real capitalism. And that's a problem. So
That's why capitalism, that word, I don't think should be used anymore. It's free markets, because that says everything. It's a market and it is free.
Right. And yeah, so I would agree that I think we have to re-own that messaging, and we have to go out there and we have to say, look, socialism, you know, you can only paint so many pictures. You can only point directly to Venezuela. They're all on the record for supporting it, and say, these are false promises that don't work. But I really want to hit on the fact that, yeah, I mean, the capitalists and kind of the crony capitalists, they've made this battle so much harder, and they've opened the door for AOC and Bernie to prevent socialism. But we should take this as an opportunity And I would agree. Let's own the free market mantra and let's show folks why it's the way forward.
Thank you so much, Cliff. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you again. Cliff Maloney, he is Young Americans for Liberty. He is the president of that. It's a great organization. YoungAmericansForLiberty.org. YALiberty.org. Thanks, Cliff. Talk to you again.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.